You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. 90 more minutes, boys! Are you ready to rumble?
Probably 120 in penalty kicks because
yeah,
it's 2020.
Right. No, maybe. You're probably right. Yeah, it'll probably drag on forever and never end, and who knows.
But Stefan Kluivert's Eloy Room shot 24 to win MLS Cup.
No,
give it to me.
Two red cards for coming off the line. So now
confusion reigns.
So Josh Williams versus Shane O'Neill in goal.
Columbus Crew.
Oh man. Oh God. This season, what an insane season it's been. No, there's a good suggestion. Producer Anders in the private chat. The coaches take PKs. I'm actually here for that as a potential permanent change.
You don't want to see that.
Yeah, we do. I absolutely want to see that. I want to see Caleb Porter out there in slacks. I want to see Brian Schmetzer. By the way, Schmetzer, he's not going for the corners if it comes to PKs from him. He's freaking rifling it straight down the middle as hard as he can.
The topo.
As hard as he can. Anyway, we've run off the rails already, and we're just getting this MLS Cup preview started. The 25th MLS Cup. Of course, this has been a historic season. It's been a FUBAR season. It's been an insane season. It's been a rewarding season. It's been a tiring season. It is almost over. A champion will be crowned on Saturday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Fox, Unimas, TUDN, TSN, TVA. You will be watching the game. You are listening to this show. And if you take 2, 3, however many hours we do this a week out to listen to Extra Time and obsess over Major League Soccer the way we do, you will be watching the show. But I'm going to make a request here. Prophesize. Text your friends. Call your family. If they like soccer, if they think just a little bit of positivity about it, get them in line, man, because if we want our soccer tent to grow, we all got to get in there and we got to pull more people in with us. So that is my one request. We've got a big show coming up. Caleb Porter will join the show. Brian Schmetzer will join the show. Jonathan Mensah will join the show. Christian Roldan will join the show. We're running through all of them. And in the meantime, in between, it's four, Charlie. You're putting up five, but it's actually four.
Is that one more?
No, that's it. It's just four.
Charlie, you're the fifth. You're the fifth special person.
Charlie Davies here to mystify you or inspire you with his takes. Let's jump into it. Let's just go because I'm feeling it. I'm a little bit hyped. Feel a little bit like a boxing promoter here. Dave, sell the people at home. Get excited. Get jacked. Take us up to like 15 on the scale 1 to 10.
So a final is always special. A one game soccer moment where winner walks away with it all is always special because you always see chaos, but you rarely see the two best teams. And you are looking at the two best rosters in MLS this year, playing some of the best soccer they've played, facing off against each other. You're talking about big number 10s in Nico and Zelarayan. You're talking about goal scorers in Zardes and Rui Diaz. You're talking about teams that hit on draft picks, that hit on international signings, that hit on MLS trades, that hit on TAM signings, and they can go not 11 deep. They can go 14, 15 deep. And that's when we see the best games in MLS. I think we saw it back in 2016. I think we saw it again when Atlanta was able to win MLS Cup. When you have teams that can change what they do, that can bring more talent off the bench, that don't have weak spots, the game's not going to be won by a mistake, and it's not going to be won by the ability to take advantage of one player. It's going to be won by greatness. It's going to be won by big moments. That doesn't happen all the time. So this is going to be a great MLS Cup, and I'm excited to see it go down. And I'm going to play my whole weekend around it, baby. I finally got something to do on a weekend. It's going to be perfect.
And you don't have to leave the house because you probably shouldn't be leaving the house at this point.
Never leave the house.
8:30 p.m. Eastern, get your snacks up, get ready. I'm going to throw this out there. This season has a unique place in history. And it's the pandemic and it's COVID and it's everything that we've all gone through. And there's nobody that's been able to escape this. Absolutely nobody. We know on this show that we've all had our own struggles with it as well. But these teams have too. And in Columbus Crew's camp, they got another positive test coming out this week, they've announced. That's in addition to the players that were not medically cleared to play previously. So this is a game played within the times. and it can't escape those times. And it's also the 25th season, and this time we were supposed to be, and still are, and we did so much of this actually during the pandemic to honor all the players that came before, and we'll talk about the 25 greatest in a little bit. A historic year, and you've got an MLS original here in the Columbus Crew. That's special. That's amazing. They were almost gone. They were almost in Austin. They were saved predominantly by their fans, the passion, the fervor, the effort, the pure just like refusal to let this club die. And also the Haslam family who stepped in and said, hey, here's the investment. And by the way, here's a new stadium coming next year. And oh, by the way, this future for this club that looked to be maybe snuffed out is exceedingly bright. And now we're here. We can win a title. We can win our second championship just a little more than 10 years after we won our first. And we have a head coach that's from Ohio. And we have a GM that's from our president, excuse me, Tim Bezpachenko, I'm sorry, that's from Ohio. We are of this state, and we are going to try to do this for our state. And the flip side is the Sounders are the standard bearer for modern MLS. There is no other way to put it. They have never missed the playoffs from the moment they stepped into this league, whether it be the previous regime of decision makers or the current one with Garth Lagerwey on the soccer side. They've done it all right. Their players have been shining lights. They've developed from within. They've built a squad that should be the envy of basically every other club in this league right now. So you have this sort of clash that's, you know, it's contrasting in some ways, but it's so similar, as you said, Dave, in others. They've done the right things. They've won the games they had to win. They are here. And then to play it at Maffrey Stadium, and I'm just going to take it back a little bit, or Crew Stadium, or whatever you call it in the history of this. I mean, the history of just this stadium is unfathomable in American soccer history, and really North American soccer history, because it all connects. To play this game on that hallowed ground and have it be the last playoff game at Mapfre, because we were correct that they will play some regular season games there next year as the new stadium comes online. But this will be the last playoff game, and it could be a championship. And it could be Caleb Porter, who won it with the Portland Timbers on this field, doing the lifting of that trophy. I mean, I'm a narrative guy. You know that. I say it all the time on the show. There's so many of them. They're all woven together. And then to combine that with what you were saying, Dave, about the soccer being special, it's the perfect way to end this season. And I'm exhausted. Frankly, I'm kind of ready for it to be, you know, have the like capstone put on top of it. But it's the perfect one. And we'll never be able to forget this year. And I don't think we'll ever forget this final as well.
I agree with you. For me personally, by the way, real quick, Maffrey Stadium, my first MLS Cup, 2015. That was the first one I ever went to. I went to an Eastern Conference Finals there. I've been to two USA-Mexico games there. And there is something about a night game at Maffrey. When you're there, you can just smell it. It's cold. The wind just rolls right through and the crowd just jumps. The stadium bounces. Obviously, it's 2020. We won't have all of that, but I felt it a little bit in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'm excited to feel it again in MLS Cup. This is a stadium where the moment the energy gets ratcheted up, all of the energy of what that building has meant for U.S. soccer and what it is just comes right out. And you could feel it. And I think you're going to feel it again for MLS Cup, as you were saying, Weeby. I'm pretty excited that it's happening there. That's happening for these fans.
It's too bad that it won't be, you know, you won't have all the tailgating and the mud and the muck and the mire as it often is. And that's part of the fun. You know, I remember that Mexico game we went to. You're going in and like your feet are covered in mud. You're freezing. You can't feel anything. And that's part of the experience. Before we get to Caleb Porter, Charlie, as you've listened to us sort of rant and rave here, what's come up inside of you? Like on this day, as we begin, you know, this whole process, it's been long. It's been arduous for everybody. Where do you stand right now?
I'm hyped to see two of the most dynamic attacking midfielders in the league. These are premier attacking midfielders. When you talk about Nico Ladero and what he's done for the Seattle Sounders since he's been a part of this club, 25 greatest MLS players of all time.
Not according to the official list, but we'll get into that beef later.
Yeah, we'll get into that later. And Lucas Alarion, who they hit. Well, you know, you go out, you want to make an acquisition that's going to change the way you play and allow you to be flexible and adaptable, which both players allow you to be on the front foot and aggressive and keep possession. But also, if you want to sit back and use him as your pivot to get out of trouble and counter, those two players can do it. Ability on set pieces, ability to control the flow of the game, the rhythm of the game. They can beat their players 1v1, and it's not with pace. It's just with deception. These two are arguably the greatest players. I mean, you have Alejandro Pozuelo. You have these two. You have Reynoso at Minnesota now, who's vaulted into this because of the performance that he had against Seattle. It took that. He needed that performance in this conversation. And Carlos Hill. After that, then there's another tier when you talk about Perea at Orlando City. Maxi Morales at New York City FC, who really haven't got into that to that category of being able to score goals, control the game. So I look at these two players as setting the tone for both clubs. Now, we don't know the tactics, and I think it's going to change throughout the game. But those two players are dynamic. They're exciting. That's why I want to watch this game, because you know it's not going to be poor, because these two players have quality, immense quality. And then you can even go into Jossy Zardes, you know, who is a goal scorer. Does he have that big showing? Can he you know, finish? If he only gets one or two opportunities, can he be clinical and finish? And then Jordan Morris, who's really had this stellar season. I think he's taken a whole step with his game, being able to influence the game outside of just using his raw athleticism, strength and pace and acceleration. Can he come inside? Can he combine? Can he draw defenders out of space to create more for Rui Diaz or Lodeiro? Him being an X factor, I think, has also changed the way Seattle Sounders play.
So many stars in this game. Before we get to Caleb Porter here, we got some stars in the mailbag. Dave, some Nostradamuses, yeah, who came in and remembered what they wrote us way back when. Give them their shine, and we'll get to Caleb.
So first, we got Dan in Columbus, who wrote us an email in 2019. He wrote this. He said, if the Crew signs Zellerion, then the starting MLS Cup winning 11 will be Zardes, Santos, Zellerion, Diaz, Trapp, Nagby, Valenzuela, Wormgore, Mensah, Offal, and Room. Then he follows up and says, close. Williams has fit in very well for Wormgore, who's gotten hurt. And of course, Trapp for Arthur was the one mistake he made. But this was in December of 2019. So I think Dan gets a star on the chest for nailing.
Yeah, Dan in Columbus, well done, my man. That was pretty good. To come in with that sort of like, that's a take. You know, we probably got this email and we were like, oh yeah, wink, wink, Dan in Columbus. Good stuff, buddy. You're really drinking the Kool-Aid, and now we look like morons.
And then Brent Prattley hit us up 2 weeks into the season and said, my name's Brent. You probably won't remember it since it was like 2 years ago at this point, COVID. But back in March, I emailed you guys ahead of the Seattle-Columbus matchup in week two. In that email, I guaranteed that we were seeing a preview of the 2020 MLS Cup. Fast forward, and that has come true. Seeing as that has come true, I feel as though I should say guarantee a result. That being said, on Saturday, December 12th, 2020, the Seattle Sounders will beat Columbus Crew 3-1 and capture their third MLS Cup in 5 years, ensuring their dynasty. I went back and looked at the email. He did, in fact, email us this exactly when they played.
Salute.
That's wild.
Salute.
One on each side. We will get our predictions here in a little bit. We'll also discuss the dynasty tag, because I had a column that I wrote and I really dug in, and I'm going to, I don't think they're a dynasty just yet, but we'll dig into that on the other side of Caleb Porter. We'll be right back. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. The head coach of the Columbus Crew, Caleb Porter. Caleb, welcome to Extra Time, man.
Thanks, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, I'm looking at you right here, and I'm thinking about the last time I saw you, and it was right before MLS is back, and you were telling us that the ultimate goal was to get to MLS Cup, and now here we are, and you're an Ohio guy, and this club was on the brink, but a couple years ago. The fans, the Haslam family, they came in, they kept it in Columbus. The future is bright. You're playing for a championship. Part of this, to me, an MLS and original club, winning this or being here even in this year, it feels a little bit poetic. How does it feel to you, sort of from 1,000 feet or just inside?
Yeah, you know me. I look for a story. Part of why I took this job, my connections. I like the story of, you know, a club that had a strong history, a good past, a good foundation, but needed a little bit of a new era, new energy. I knew there was new ownership. I knew Tembez Machenko was coming in, and that's important, being around top people. It motivated me. Motivated me to take the job and to bring a trophy. I knew it was 2008 was the last MLS Cup trophy. So it's been a 2-year process. I won it in 3 in Portland and 3 in Akron, and I guess we're ahead of schedule. But we got to get the job done tomorrow. So as much as this story and nostalgia is all there, I'm locked in on execution on Saturday. That's going to be the most important thing, is executing and not thinking about all the other stuff. When I've been in these situations before, a lot of things can be on your mind, but you got to focus on the training and the preparation.
With Portland, but in Columbus, in some ways, that's part of the poetry for me, is that you were the last coach that ended an MLS Cup bid for the Crew. They were on the brink. They were at home. It's the same situation you face now. What did you learn in 2015 that you're applying this week as you try to repeat the feat?
Yeah, I've been fortunate to be in this position, obviously, in college several times, winning trophies in Indiana and Akron, in Portland. So, you know, I really stay locked onto the process, you know, and lock out everything else, you know, and I really try not to change. I think a lot of coaches overthink the tournament, overthink these games, overthink the tactics, and they change, and they change themselves. They act differently. They change what they're doing. And, you know, I think I always believe your habits are your habits, and you work every day for those, and then your habits make you. And that's why I try not to take a day off with my team, not one day off, because I feel like everything you put in the bank every day comes out in this type of situation. So if we've worked hard on these habits in our process and our mentality, and if we genuinely believed that we'd be here and that we could win this, then we'll have a great chance to do it. There are a lot of teams that never talk about winning a trophy or being even in this situation. And my experience has been, you know, even in college as a coach, that only the team that really believed they were going to do it, it actually does it. And we're playing a team in Seattle on the other side that definitely believes they're going to win it as well.
A lot of belief from both these sides. You use the word overthink there, and that stood out to me because I feel like this is the year of overthinking. This is a year of anxiety and of stress, and it's put this huge weight on everyone in this society and in the entire world. But the players, the coaches, the staffers in this league, I think have experienced this pandemic in a little bit of a different way. And of course, you guys have, as we know, in these playoffs. Help the rest of us understand your day-to-day for what you and what the players is like, what you guys have gone through, where the anxiety might come from, the stress might come from. I mean, what have you been through?
Where do I begin? I mean, this year has been unbelievably challenging. You know, and it's even more challenging when you're leading 27 guys on a daily basis and a staff. But I would say that it's definitely been one of the most rewarding years of my life. You can either go PTSD, right, through situations like this, or you can, you know, do PTG, which is post-traumatic growth. And I choose in these situations of adversity, when it's really hard and there's a lot of stress and anxiety, to grow, not, you know, have negative issues or make excuses. Through the lowest moments, the hardest moments, the most challenging moments is the greatest opportunity for growth. And I think we've approached it that way all season long, as players, as coaches, as a team. And that's why we've become a really, really strong team this year, stronger than ever.
You said something in your post game the other day about Jonathan Mensah not seeing his wife for 10 months. I mean, what sacrifices have your players had to make? You're more than, and your staffers and all of you are more than sort of professionals and coaches in this moment. The human aspect is sort of staggering.
It is. And, you know, I think it really defines who you are as a person. I mean, you can't fake it during a pandemic if you don't care about your players. You know, if you're in it for the right reasons, if you're in it for, you know, as fluffy as it sounds, the journey with your players and the growth and the relationships and to, you know, bring a group together to accomplish something special that'll last forever. I don't think in pro sports it's any different than at any level. You know, when you look at the best teams in the world in every sport, it's about a group of guys coming together with a purpose and getting to the end of the road and getting that trophy. And that's what it's always been about for us. So I can't say enough about my players, how they've dealt with all the stuff external and not let it get in the way of what we're trying to accomplish together as a group of men.
We talked about Darlington Nagbe the last time we chatted. I want to talk about Lucas Zelarayán this time. You dropped an F-bomb in your post game, which I thought was fitting for what he's been for this team, what he's been for neutrals this year. Was it love at first sight with that guy? Like, tell me about the first time you saw him on tape, knowing that maybe you were going to try to sign him, or when you went to Mexico and compare that to what you saw in person with this club.
Yeah, I don't know. It's different for maybe some coaches. You know, maybe it's the same for some, but I love my players. I care about them. I have to like them as players, and I have to like them as people. You know, to give what I give every single day, to lead them the way I want to lead them, you know, I need to have a group of guys that I relate to, I connect with. It is a family. It really is. You know, I see them more than my family. And so with Lucas, for sure, I needed a 10. I was looking for that type of guy. I had a great one in Portland with Diego Valeri that I signed my first signings when I got there. And, I knew with, you know, club legend, Pipa, Federico Higuain leaving that it was big shoes to follow. We needed to get it right. And fortunately myself, Tim Bezbachenko and Pat Onstad, you know, we looked at a bunch of players and, you know, the first time he was presented to me, it took me 5 minutes. I flew over, met with him, saw him train, watched him play in a game in Juarez, believe it or not. So that's how much I guess I want to get the right players as I was in, you know, Juarez, Mexico, trying to find him.
What did you see and what have you seen from him now that he's with you? And maybe you can compare him to Valeri. He's that sort of player and that sort of impact.
Yeah, I don't like to compare guys because, you know, there's differences in every player. You know, it's not fair to compare. I've had a lot of really good players. But he's pretty special. He's very unique. You know, I studied his career. When I dig into a guy, I look at everything. And when I met with him, I knew he was a perfect fit because he seemed also that he needed a new project. He needed something to be motivated by. You know, I've seen this a lot over the years. These players in a tough business that's very cutthroat, sometimes they lose their soul a little bit. And I like to find guys like that. Valeri was very similar as well. And I like to kind of reinvigorate them. You know, as long as they have special, special talent, I feel like I've been able to kind of grab a guy like Diego Valeri or Lucas Ellerian and revive their careers a little bit because he was on a little bit on the outs at Tigres, but really special. He's different than Valeri. You know, they're both really good players. He's more of a dribbler. He's a guy that can cut you up and unbalance you in very creative ways off the dribble to free himself up. He's similar to Valeri. He's got a final pass in him. He can score goals. But he's a guy you're going to have to watch and keep your eye on if you're the opponent because he can pop up at different times and hurt you.
I think these are the two best teams in MLS this year, Caleb, and I'm excited to see you guys in the final. Before I let you go, do me a favor, nerd out just for a second on the soccer side. What's the most interesting matchup aspect here that you see, that you're thinking about?
It's interesting when you look at their team and our team, there's a lot of similarities, actually. You know, they have a striker that's a box striker that's a poacher. You know, they have a creative presence in Ladero. They have a stretching guy in Morris. They have two midfielders that kind of move their team and are balanced. They have outside backs. They're dynamic. So I don't think there's any coincidence that we're both here at the end. I do agree the two best teams are in the final. And, you know, when you look at their system and you look at some of the things they're doing, it's very similar to us. So I think it's going to be a collision of similar styles, actually. And I think the team that can control more of the game, that's and not just with the ball, but without the ball, is, I think, going to be the team that wins the game. And you know, I don't think it'll be too much of a chess match where it's boring because Smetzer is a tactical guy, but he understands that your players need to be loose to perform. He won't overdo it, but he'll give them enough. And I'm the same. You know, I give my guys a lot of, you might not know, a lot of information, a lot of tactics, a lot of information, but I know the right time to let them go. And when I get to the playoffs, in a lot of ways, I let my team go. I let them play. And you know, that's why we usually play in a very free way, still organized, but I don't overdo it because you paralyze guys in big moments and big games under pressure if you give them too much.
This is the big moment. Caleb, thank you for your time, man. Good luck on Saturday.
Thanks a lot, Andrew. Appreciate it.
All right, Caleb Porter, he gave it to you right there. Like for like, two teams playing to their strengths. Always enjoy talking to Caleb. We got Brian Schmetzer coming up here in just a second. But first, let's dive into sort of the storyline, the poetic side of this game, because I think the two stories on the two results are just both really rich and incredible. One side is if the Sounders win in their fourth final in 5 years, that's three MLS Cups in 5 years, and they probably should be or could be, depending on your perspective, considered a dynasty. On the other side, if the Crew win, we said this, it's a team that's gone from the brink of basically like elimination. And not elimination in a tournament sense, elimination in an existence sense, and came back and won cup with new ownership, with the same fans who dragged them back from the brink. I mean, that is an incredible storyline in itself. Before we compare those, I do just want to dive into this dynasty thing because I kind of left a little cliffhanger before we talked to Caleb there. I don't personally think yet that the Seattle Sounders are a dynasty. Does anybody in this podcast right now, raise your hands, do you think, regardless of result, that the Sounders should be considered a dynasty? I see you, Dave. Explain yourself.
So let's say they lose this game. You could take a six-year span, and you would have two MLS Cups, a supporter shield, and what would it be, four finals in 6 years?
And an Open Cup as well.
And now, an Open Cup.
Can I hit timeout on you? Would you do that? Would you say that this era for the Sounders in the dynasty starts in 2014, or would you say it starts in 2016?
Because I would in an say argument against you, I can do whatever I want because you are fluid and you would do it yourself. Let's say you take that away. I still say two wins in 4 years, because let's then eliminate this year. Two wins in 4 years and three appearances, that's a dynasty by itself. Two wins in 5 years and four appearances, that's a dynasty by itself. That means you've won four Western Conference championships in that time and two MLS Cups. That, in my mind, especially in a league that's only 25 years old, that is a dynasty.
But let me just throw it back at you. Mm-hmm. In that time, you have not won the Western Conference in the regular season. So you don't have that side of excellence. You've not gotten past...
You're going to tell me the Red Bulls are a dynasty?
You're
a shield truther now.
0%. No, that's cool. Doyle. He would tell you that. Maybe. I would tell you that there are only two dynasties in MLS history. I would tell you that 96 to 99 DC United is a dynasty. They won eight trophies from the jump. They won three MLS Cups in 4 years. They were in the other final in 98 against the Fire. They won two supporter shields, though you could quibble that. 97, the supporter shield didn't technically, quote unquote, exist, but they finished with the best record in the entire league. They won an Open Cup. They won CONCACAF Champions Cup. They won Interamericana. So they have so much. And then the other one to me is 2010 to 14 Galaxy. Five trophies in five seasons, three cups, two supporter shields. They didn't do Jacket, Open Cup, and CCL, but honestly, that's because Bruce really just cared about cups.
So MLS,
after those first 2 years.
So the Galaxy won five trophies in...
Correct.
And how many did Seattle win?
Two. Because I'm not counting 2014.
Got it.
Because I think it's different. I think that's a different team. I think Oba, Deuce, Siggy, it's not the same. Like, I'm talking about the Schmetzer.
Ozzy wasn't on that team. Chad wasn't on that team. Fry wasn't on that team. I'm just making sure.
All right. No, that's fine. That's a legitimate argument. But they didn't. How about this? Anders is in here chiming in, and I need you to cram it, Anders. In 2015, I don't think you can continue that dynasty because they didn't do anything. They didn't win anything. They didn't come close to winning anything. They were like fourth in the Western Conference. So to me, that's a break point. And they had to make a change. Siggy was let go. To me, that's the end of where you can sort of extend that. It's the Schmetzer era now. And so in this era, to me, and this is why they're not a dynasty yet, two trophies in almost five seasons. Of course, the almost is there because if they win this last game, it's 3-5. And a runner-up. And no regular season excellence at the top of the league. They've still been very, very good. Don't get that twisted. No U.S. Open Cup excellence, though. That used to be sort of a hallmark of what the Sounders were. No CCL excellence. To me, a dynasty...
The CCL one is a blight to me on this group. Because the regular season, I agree with you, but the reality of the perception of MLS... is that people talk about MLS Cup finals and MLS Cup championships. So very that true. Has always stood above. So that shouldn't be an argument in favor of the Galaxy because right. It's only gotten harder to win Supporter Shield and the Galaxy didn't even care to talk about it. And it doesn't come up in the conversation. The inability to compete internationally, which kind of is what puts other teams in that conversation because of how they represent the league overseas, is a blight on this Seattle Sounders.
But that's just a recent addition. To when you're comparing dynasties and teams, right. How are you doing in CCL? That wasn't, Galaxy in 2012, 2014. We weren't talking about Oh, are they winning CCL? That's not the case.
Well, we thought we would. They were just terrible at it.
Right. Yeah. Can we throw it back to that, by the way? And that's the blight on them, too. They lost in the preliminary round to the Puerto Rico Islanders.
Because they didn't care.
I know they didn't care. They got railhawked twice in that year. That's what I'm saying. Bruce Arena was like, we won two shields. I don't care. I just won MLS Cup. I have an older roster. Let's just go get it.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about Seattle Sounders, it's the culture. Ziggy Schmidt instilled a culture within the Seattle Sounders, and Garth Lagerwey really kind of took him to a whole new level. And I don't think Garth gets enough credit. I think people do give Garth credit, but I don't think they give him enough credit. He's done a fantastic job of continuing to make sure that they're not settling, right? They're just continuing to push the envelope, continuing to win or compete for championships, and that's what they've done. I think Schmetzer has, you know, I don't want to take any credit away from him, but he's fallen into a great situation. So Ziggy Schmidt leaves, and he has a lot of core players, right? A lot of really important players. And then he's been able to add to the group the right players. You have Jordan Morris falling onto your lap because his father's the team doctor. I mean, it's not like they really had to go and scout Jordan Morris. Everyone knew the talent he was from Jurgen Klinsmann. They get him right. They get Roldan right. You already had Stefan Frey. Chad Marshall was there and then was forced to retire.
Well, in fairness to them, but they got Stefan Frey right. He wasn't a starter in Toronto locked down. Right.
I mean, but at the end of the day, there are a lot of players in position to do well. Rui Diaz coming in. I think, you know, Garth Lagerwey, Ladero, Garth Lagerwey.
So can I just say, I think Garth took over in 2014, right? Yeah. So if you want to call it the Garth Lagerwey error, then they've got more trophies, and then
I'm still not going to. And you can also say that this is just a continuation of the Ziggy era because of Brian Schmetzer. I would also say that is incorrect because we're not giving Brian Schmetzer enough credit. For whatever reason, Brian Schmetzer has kind of been pushed into this corner where it's like, well, this was like Siggy's team, and you, like you said, Charlie, you walked into a good situation. Well, by the way, that good situation didn't include any MLS Cup playoffs success of any notable measure. Like, it didn't. That was the entire blight on the organization. Really the only one, because they were always there. They were always competitive. They did not win MLS Cups. Brian Schmetzer gets there. And this season, when he got there, they were sort of going, they were on the precipice. They were sort of hanging there. And that's why Siggy was let go. And you would have taken a huge, huge sort of seismic shift for Siggy to be let go. And it happened. And then Schmetzer wins it. He creates an environment where Nico Ladero gets the best out of himself and the best out of the team. He creates an environment where it's easy for Jordan Morris to improve, but it's also demanded because he's surrounded by guys like that. He gave his players the reins. He hired an incredible staff, which we talk about on this show all the time. The guys that he surrounded himself with, and sure, some of them were there from the Siggy era too. Brian Schmetzer, just as much as Siggy, created a culture. That culture was playoff time, we effing get the job done. Like, and we go in, we do it. Now, look, Toronto fans are rolling their eyes because they didn't take a shot in their first win, yada, yada, yada. But the Brian Schmetzer era is the MLS Cup era for the Sounders.
I agreed with you. The one thing, so obviously the team was good and the team's been good. The one thing that stands out, though, is Nico Ladero basically signed when Schmetzer took over. And last show, we spent 40 minutes talking about how Nico Ladero is the most important piece of this. His ability to play constantly, so Schmetzer doesn't even have to make decisions with him.
There is not a doubt. Go ahead, continue. Yeah, I was just backing you up.
Yeah, so I think that's part of what happens to Schmetzer, right? Is like the players kind of have overshadowed what he's done. And then I would say, when you look at Seattle from phase one to phase two, and I think that's the Ziggy Schmidt phase into the Garth Lagerwey one, and I know they crossed over, Ziggy Schmidt was more of an MLS 2.0 thinker in the way he worked. He built the club up. He created Seattle. He made it the atmosphere, which was able to sell it to Garth Lagerwey and then have Garth sell it further, overseas to players. Then Garth, I think, took it to the next level in terms of the professionalism of, you know, analytics and scouting and the way they could spend money and the using the different attributes. That, to me, are the two errors. And so Schmetzer, I think, deserves a ton of credit because it's not a guarantee that you have good players, you put them on the field, they're going to win. That's what Schmetzer does. But he hasn't changed Seattle. He didn't change anything in my mind. Garth did and Ziggy did. And then Schmetzer, I think, deserves a ton of credit for what he's won. And he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer when all of this is over. But that's why I don't think he stands alone at any moment in this conversation.
But I'll give you this, Weeby. you have a player who comes in at the same time, and we can talk about certain coaches who have that player and they don't do anything with it. Then a new coach comes in with the same team and gets them into the playoffs, let's say, or gets them into a point where they're competing for trophies, or, you know,
like Greg Vanney and Ryan Nelson,
like Bruce Arena taking over, and Carlos Heel was there, but nobody was really talking about Carlos Heel, you know, getting the team into the playoffs because they were really bad. So I give a ton of credit for,
but Nico wasn't there. That's the part I just don't want us to forget. Nico showed up like a week before Ziggy got fired.
It's really important for the coach to steer the locker room in the right direction. And when you have players who are unhappy, because no one is going to be all happy if they're not playing. That's just the rule of the game. You're never going to have 18 happy players in the locker room, let's say 23, 25. If guys are not playing or getting the playing time they deserve, they're not going to be happy no matter how successful the team is doing. But to keep them still bought in, that is the key. Because every player reacts in a different way. Every player has you know, triggers, needs sometimes consoling, whatever. Schmetzer has that dialed in because no matter who's unhappy, who's not liking the situation, it never appears that way to the public eye. And that goes to Brian Schmetzer. So that's where I give him all the credit, because it is a man managing job. You can have all your assistant coaches do a lot of the tactics. You need to have your players in the right frame of mind when they take the pitch. That goes back to the head coach, to the manager of the squad. And that's what Schmetzer is. And he's done that for a consistent amount of time. We're talking years. So that's why I give this team the label dynasty. And they're going to nail in the hammer as the greatest dynasty ever if they win this MLS Cup.
Greatest dynasty ever? I'm sorry. OG DC United's out here like slapping you up, Charlie, being like,
I'm talking about right now. Right now.
Modern MLS, I agree with you. And look, if they win this MLS Cup, there will be no doubt in my mind. You win 3 MLS Cups in 5 years, you are a dynasty. That is the ultimate prize. I know Doyle's a supporter of Shield Truther, and I'm sure there are some out there listening that have bought into that or are as well. And that's an incredible honor. It's an incredible accomplishment. It is not MLS Cup. MLS Cup still remains the ultimate prize, and I think every team would tell you that. The only ones that wouldn't are the ones that didn't win it. So if you win 3 in 5 years, Sounders, you're a dynasty. Now, is that a better story, though, than what's going on with the Crew? Because that's like, and I'm a narrative story person, and I'm like, this Crew story, that's like the Goliath story, kind of. Like, the Sounders are not underdogs in any way. They're not, like, counted out, or we weren't like, oh, can they do it? Like, of course they can do it. They've been doing it since the jump in MLS. Whereas the Crew, that's a fairy tale, man. And it's the fairy tale at the end where you, like, you shut the book, and you look at your kid, and you both are like, man, that was uplifting. That was amazing. Like, I'm rooting for them, to be honest with you, just for that emotional side of things.
Does Cam close the book as a 2-year-old and go, man, that was
uplifting? He's three now. But if I wanted to invent a narrative, if I wanted to invent like the conversation and put it on Twitter,
for sure,
then you can blow me up.
So one, obviously, I think Seattle's already a dynasty, so that makes it harder for me to be on that side. But the other is everything you just said. And I think for Columbus, there's a few parts of this. One is how improbable this seemed a few years ago. Two is the energy and the organization of these fans in a league that's been built by supporters, that one of the two major trophies is literally controlled by and run by supporters, which is unprecedented, not just in the US, but around the world. For them to save this team and then have it go to a final, to have them go to a final and win a championship that soon after is unbelievable, especially the way the team was run going into that. But also, a lot of teams in a moment like this, they have to do something, right? They're moving into a new stadium. And how often do we see an MLS team? They rebrand, they reshape their team, whatever it is, they kind of do something to restart themselves. Columbus wouldn't have to do that. This championship would do that for them. It puts them back on the cover of the newspaper. It puts them in everyone's conversation around the city. And then next year you open a stadium as MLS Cup champions. And that is the best way that you can restart the Columbus Crew under the Haslams and for the future. And that's what Columbus is doing no matter what. And this is the best way to get it done. And that's why I think this is the number one narrative. Because if Columbus wins this, it will mean everything for the future of the Columbus Crew and for the present.
Talk about opening the stadium, brand new stadium, with that championship banner.
Mm-hmm.
That's talking about leaving a lasting impact, a legacy, which the Haslams would be. I mean, talk about a turnaround, believing in Caleb Porter to come in and basically rebuild this club after Greg Berhalter left, and people thought, how is he going to, how can he basically take this team, make it his own, and win and compete. After all of these players are kind of locked into contracts and the style, he's been able to adapt. And I think proved a lot of people wrong, one, to get this team to be put in a position to win. But it's all about him identifying which players he needs and going to sign them. Lucas Alarán was massive, but so wasn't Nagbe, right? So getting those two players into your system and knowing, okay, if I have certain players, then it's about, you know, getting room in goal. That's a huge signing as well. These important players, these pieces, he was able to fill. And that's kind of changed the outlook for the Columbus Crew. So now it's very possible that they beat Columbus, the Seattle Sounders at home.
And by the way, it's not just the guys that he went out and got either. And you mentioned that he had to sort of look around and say, okay, who fits for me? And you heard from Caleb, he has an idea of the way he wants to play. He wants to have that in the box nine. He wants to have a 10, a true 10. He wants to have Darlington Nagbe. Let's not even describe it as like a certain type of player. He wants to have Darlington. He wants to have a stretch the field winger, and he wants to have one come inside. And then he needs a lockdown center back in the back. Look, Mensah had not been at his best before Caleb arrived. He was at his very best this year. Caleb got Jonathan Mensah to buy in and then got the very best of him. Pedro Santos was looking like maybe a bust in Columbus before last year. And then he was a game changer for Caleb Porter. And this year he makes the difference. Luis Diaz, I haven't always been like, oh yeah, he was really at what we expected him to be this year. But in the moment, he has been the right guy. Then you talked about the fullbacks. You talked about making a decision on Eloy Room. Like, he and Tim Bezbachinko just hit. They just kept hitting. And that's what it takes. And we've talked about that with the Revs too. To make that turnaround in that amount of time, you can't go out and swing and miss on TAM, DP, starting caliber players and expect to be in this position. That's why they're here. And more so than that, they're here because of their fans. And what a reward to those fans to be able to play this game again in Columbus. I mean, it's super special. I just want to, before we go to Brian Schmetzer here, to just call out those supporters one more time. Without you, none of these conversations would be happening. This championship possibility would not be happening. You did this, and you may reap the rewards. And even if the Crew lose, I think that reward has always been there since the Haslams came in with the investment, since the team started to improve. You have Ohio boys that are building the squad, mm-hmm. and you've got some that are the stars of your team as well. I mean, it's just a special time to be a Crew fan, and I congratulate them. Let's take a listen to what Brian Schmetzer has to say. We'll be right back to talk about the soccer, do our player spotlights on this game, and do predictions as well as interviews with Jonathan Mensah and Christian Roldan. All right, time now for an AT&T 5G call to the field. It is Brian Schmetzer in a familiar position. Four MLS Cups in 5 years, Coach. I mean, this is like old hat to you, right? It's just ho-hum.
Well, it's not ho-hum, but thank you. It's been a successful run, but it's not ho-hum. We're actually excited again. I mean, getting out there today was good for the guys to get on the field and do a little training session. I hadn't been to Obits in, you know, since Zig was around, you know, when we played back here in Columbus. So good memories, fond memories. You know, the guys are in good spirits, so it's good.
We've had a debate here about Sounders dynasty or not dynasty. My position is that you guys are on the brink of being a quote-unquote dynasty. If you win, you will be. He says you already are. Do you ever think about dynasty? Do you think about legacy? Is this team a dynasty, or does it take a championship in this game?
Well, Andrew, I have to say that I'm a little bit on your side. I mean, I am so pleased and so proud of the success that the organization has had. But look, there's other teams that have two championships. Galaxy has five. You put yourself at three, and then maybe, David, you could sit there and say, okay, well, let's talk about them now a little bit. You know, they've won three out of five. I mean, that's a pretty impressive record. But, you know, I said it the other day. I mean, the Seattle Storm has four. Seahawks have one. Sonics have one. I mean, Seattle's been a pretty successful sports town. But I don't think, you know, other than the Storm, I mean, I wouldn't use the word dynasty quite yet.
Okay, that's fair. Listen, you're the expert, so you get to decide. I have to follow what you decide. I'm curious, though. We've watched you now do this. This will be your fourth time. From sitting in this chair ready here, you know, 5 years ago to now, how have you changed? How has your coaching changed? How has this club changed?
Okay, that's a good question. Look, in 2016, we were flying by the seat of our pants. I mean, we were so far down, we were just like going, holy smokes. We just got to win this game, and we got to win this game. And then Aussie's rallying cry was, you know, we're not finished yet. That was Aussie coming through in the locker room as the captain. And then, you know, 2017 was a little different with their little, you know, their little letdown after that first championship. And you learn some things from that experience. You know, you go through, you know, different coaches. Ante Razov was with me the first year, and then Gonzo jumps on board, and Jimmy and Preki. So I've added bits and pieces to the staff that make us look a little different. And it's always just every experience you want to try and reflect on what you do well, what you don't do well, and learn from those. And certainly having been in a few MLS Cups, you know, it was, okay, we're going to travel today. We've got a bunch of media today. Mm-hmm. The training schedule. This is the film schedule. This is the meal schedule. We know what we're doing here, so it's not a surprise. 2016, when we flew into Toronto, it was like, okay, well, you know, Grant Clark, our team admin, is like going, okay, I don't know what to do. And we figured it out. So having been in a few MLS Cups, it does give you that little bit of confidence that you know what you're doing.
What is it about game day and MLS Cups that and obviously every time you have a chance to play for a championship, it gets you going, but you've experienced so many of them in so many years. There have to be little moments that you sort of look forward to or cherish or think about or plan for.
Well, what I always like to do, Andrew, is, you know, I always say to the team, look, it's your team. You guys in the locker room, you guys do the hard work every day. It's long. MLS is a long season. This one, especially with COVID. I mean, you guys are the ones that deserve the praise and the reward for all the work and sacrifices that they have made. And so I'm not one of those guys that likes the limelight. You guys know that. And I like to kind of stand off to the side and just watch. I love watching people, you know. And those guys get up on the stage and, you know, last year Nico had a son with him and Roman's kid was up there. And, you know, it was just such a euphoric scene seeing all those soccer players make so many sacrifices and they get to celebrate with their families in Seattle in front of 70,000 people. And those are the moments, Andrew, that really stick out to me. Just watching those guys bask in the glory of what they've accomplished. That's the thing that really gives me a massive source of pride.
I was going to ask you about Jordan Morris, but I want you to take this wherever you want, which is, we'll look back at this over an era. You know, there are players who have been around the whole time. 2020, if you win this championship, what will stick out in your mind of why this team got it done? What makes this team maybe unique to the other teams?
Well, I don't know if any of the championship teams have been, you know, that unique. I think they've all had the same kind of thread running through them. I mean, we've had good leadership. That's number one. That 2016 team, you know, look, we were down in the dumps in the middle of the year, but that team was loaded with veteran senior players, you know, and then Aussie as the captain. I mean, we went through and 2016 wasn't an anomaly. Okay. 2017, you know, Clint had his little heart issue in 2016, couldn't play in the final. He was super motivated. In 2017, Will Bruin came onto the squad. You know, we added a couple of pieces, Gustav Svensson, good leaders in the clubhouse. 2018, when we lost to Portland in the penalty kick shootout, that was a good team. You know, that wasn't a bad team. I felt if we could have gotten past Portland, we might have ended up, you know, playing Atlanta. I mean, who knows? We would have to get past KC. But 2019, it's similar. I mean, Nico is a great captain. He's humble. He works his, you know, he works his buns off. I mean, he never stops working. He's leadership by example. His English is getting better and he can now communicate with the guys. You know, I have Steph doing, you know, some of the pregame, you know, pump up stuff, and Steph's really good. I mean, everybody respects the job he does. I think leadership, togetherness, experience, veterans, I mean, all of those teams have had those little components.
Schmetz, I expect you to be back in Seattle next year, and so we'll save the contract question because I know everybody will ask you about that. I want to ask you about this because I heard in the press conference you did that you took the scowling Caleb Porter photo off your desk, and maybe people don't know that story, but I remember it from the combine, or at least Dave reminded me that I do remember it. Why did that come off your desk, and what do you think of this managerial matchup?
It's a good one. I mean, over the years, Caleb has softened up. I've softened up. I mean, rivalry in Portland is the one that drove everything. And look, the media tried to make a little bit of Caleb's, you know, glances at Bruce Arena, you know, stuff like that. Look, Caleb's an intense guy. He is an intense guy. And, you know, maybe Caleb has a chip on his shoulder and he wants to prove to everybody that he's a winner. And I don't begrudge him at all. I love the fact that he's competitive. We're all competitive. I'm competitive. And how we show that is just, you know, it's different individuals. I took my pro license coaching course with Caleb and a couple other guys. And I got to know Caleb a little bit better. Super nice guy. You know, when you get him off, you know, and you're just having a beer and you're talking soccer and your stuff, great guy, ton of respect for him, you know, so that's why I took the photo off. We've got mutual respect now, and you know, all those days are bygone.
Coach, request for when this is all over that maybe we can be at the table next to you while you guys have a beer and talk soccer, because that sounds like an epic
conversation. At the table. I'll buy the beers.
Yeah, for sure. Not a problem.
All right. Brian Schmetzer, good luck on Saturday, Coach.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Always good to have Brian on the show. All right, let's get into the soccer side of things. We spent a lot of time sort of beating around the bush, but ultimately this is 90 minutes or 120 to see who lifts the 25th MLS Cup, the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy. Brian Schmetzer does have some decisions to make with his lineup, whereas I don't think Caleb Porter really does. He's pretty locked in on that. Schmetzer, does he go back Charlie to Svensson? Does he go to Leerdam at right back? Like, do you think he makes changes?
100% you make changes. Gustav Svensson, you play from the start. He's a proven player, all the experience. He's fit and he's healthy, and he got a good run out in the Western Conference final. You play him in this role. And I think Jovan Jones comes to the bench. He's a great player to come into the game and have that change of pace, to have a player who can be a little bit more exciting on the attacking side. He can even play left back if you need to, if Nuhu kind of was a little bit of a wild card. If he's on a caution, you take him off, you put Jovan Jones there. I think you play him. I think Calvin Leerdam comes in, so you move Roldan to the right wing spot because he can come inside all the time. He can impact the game in a variety of different ways, so you don't have to worry about Roldan because he can play almost every position on the field. So you bring in Svensson to play with João Paulo. You have Roldan at the right, and you bring Leerdam back because Leerdam, we saw him when he came in against Minnesota. He is a difference maker at right back. He gets involved. You don't have to worry about the transition whether you regain possession and you need someone to come down and provide with, play great balls into the box. He can play balls a variety of different ways, curling, driven. And I think the right pace, the touch on the balls for Rui Diaz and Morris crashing on the back post. But defensively, again, consistent. You don't have to, I think Roldan was good. Alex Roldan coming in, playing at right back. But you just didn't get enough from him attacking. Sometimes he looked unsure of himself. I think he did a good job filling the role when Leerdam wasn't fit. But now you know he's fit. He's good. He's a gamer. I'm going into this match with, one, my players with the most experience, and two, the guys who can make a difference. They haven't had enough time as far as being on the field, match fitness. But you know you can count on them. I'm playing them, and I think that's Seattle's best 11.
And then it's strength to strength. Yeah, Dave, I mean, that's sort of what Caleb told us was...
Well, that's why, to me, Leerdam has to come in, because this is one of those rare games where what both teams want to do actually allows the other team to do what they want to do. Seattle wants to come in, and they're going to sit in a tighter block and hit in transition and hit on the counter and then have some moments of possession, and Columbus wants to dominate the ball. So you bring a guy in Leerdam because you need that safe defensive work. Roldan, while he played well at times, Alex Roldan, struggled defensively against Minnesota. Minnesota had like 25% possession. That's not what you're looking at in this game, but it's fascinating to see a final where Columbus, we could tell you a year ago how they wanted to play in this game without knowing it was happening, and Seattle, and that's exactly how they're going to go in and play in this game. And what's going to be fun, to my point at the top of the show, was a player playing, having a great moment is what's going to change this game, because both these teams are so good at what they do. And we saw it against New England, right? It was Columbus just knocking and knocking and knocking on the door. and then Zellerayan loses a defender, puts in a perfect ball, Mensah's drop back, and Arter with the clean finish. That's what got Columbus over the top. And on the flip side, for Seattle, we know how dangerous they can be in transition. They didn't get to do it against Minnesota because Minnesota doesn't play that way, but Columbus steps their lineup, and now you're talking about Morris, Rui Diaz, Lodeiro, and Christian Roldan going on the break. That is lethal, and that's where Rui Diaz can be at his best, and that's where Jordan Morris, who we haven't seen at his best in the postseason, can do it as well. So that's what's so exciting to me about this game, and that's what's going to be interesting is where's that last wrinkle? But it's not going to be some crazy change. It's going to be the two teams that know what they want to do. I think the most in MLS, because 2020 has been such a crazy year, I think Columbus is the only team that's proven their distinct identity works, and they have it down pat. And Seattle's done it for 5 years now.
I think the pressure, at least on the Columbus side, is going to be on Jonathan Mensah. And he's been so good this year, but we see him sometimes in situations make a little bit of a questionable decision. We saw it in that game against Minnesota, trying to make a clearance there. And it's sort of come to light a little bit more over the last couple, games and months. And I think, honestly, that's probably fatigue for him. He has just been so relied upon. But I'm imagining a scenario in which you've got Rui Diaz, you've got Morris, you've got Nico Lodeiro that likes to shade left. You might get an opportunity where Maharis and Offal is pushed up the field, and he's having to like firefight with all three of those guys. I'm not saying he cannot do it. I'm just saying that is a heavy load for any player to carry, and that's one place I'll be looking at pretty closely. Is there a curveball here that you guys think could be thrown? Because I'm like thinking back on MLS Cup's past, and the big obvious one is the Greg Vanney diamond. Of course, that was a rematch against the same team in the Sounders, and they ended up winning that game in 2017.
Yeah.
But I don't think when we get the lineups that any of us are going to rush to Twitter and be like, oh my God, no, what is going on here? How could they? No, it's just like everybody knows. They get it. The Sounders look across the aisle and they say, we understand what the Crew are and what they want to be and what they're going to try to do. And by the way, Caleb Porter is not going to compromise who he thinks this team should be. He's proven that over and over and over. Meanwhile, Caleb Porter looks across the aisle and he says, yeah, this is a Brian Schmetzer team.
Yeah, I think from the Crew standpoint, they saw New England Revolution kind of in that similar kind of breath where you have a playmaker in Carlos Hill and everything goes through him, like Nico Lodeiro, and they're going to try and get Gustavo Bow and Tejan Buchanan down the right flank. They completely neutralized the Revolution. Completely. They took Tejan Buchanan out of the game, and that was with Luis Diaz, who, David Goss, you talked about him not having a product. Well, he has an impact. He doesn't have to have the finished product. He doesn't have to have a goal and assist, but he can still have a tremendous impact on the match, which he completely took Tejan out of the game because he just ran at him 1v1, forced him to defend, or DeJuan Jones, forced him to defend, couldn't do anything. Pedro Santos forcing Tejan to defend. And then all of a sudden, you're not seeing them make those runs. They're fatigued going from touchline to touchline. It's a lot. And then for Carlos Hill, they surrounded him. They forced the New England Revolution to find Gustavo Bo or to find Buxo. And those players were almost invisible. So I think they're going to have a similar game plan to what they had for the Revolution to completely take them off the pitch in the first half, which they were very aggressive. In the second half, then they defended and they got numbers behind the ball. They're resilient. So they showed they could play it two different ways and still be successful because they kept a clean sheet. Now, Adam Buxo is not Raul Rui Diaz. So that's another thing. Raul Rui Diaz is one of the best finishers I've ever seen in Major League Soccer. And he doesn't get, when we talk about the 25 greatest players we'll talk about later, he doesn't get the credit of being one of those great, great strikers. He's one of the best strikers I've seen in Major League Soccer. Doesn't have the blowout pace, so he's not going to amaze you with these kind of mazy runs. But what he is going to amaze you with is his movement in the box. He's shifty. He's not afraid to try the audacious attempt, whether it's a lob or volleys, right foot, left foot, good in the air, super strong. He will give any center back a nightmare. And so when you talk about Jonathan Mensah and having some of those blips at times, you can't have a blip against Raul Rui Diaz. From minute one to minute 90, he can, and he's always going to be working hard. That's another thing. You know what you're going to get from Raul Rui Diaz because he's a hard worker.
Also, so, but he's going to run in behind he's going to run in behind Josh Williams, I think. Like he's going to sit on that back shoulder and try to run into that space. And that's where it opens up for Jordan Morris on the back stick, too. If you're going to build up down the right side. Now, the flip side is if you go down the left, that is Nico Lodeiro's like magic zone. Him and Jordan and the overlap from whoever's playing left back and then Rui Diaz waiting for service in the box. I mean, look, we know who these teams are. We understand it. Let's go to Jonathan Minson now and get sort of his perspective on what is bigger than soccer this season, which is the human side of the game. We'll be right back with more. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. We're talking to Jonathan Minson. Jonathan, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
I want to talk about soccer with you, and we will talk about soccer with you, but I heard a nugget in Caleb Porter's press conference the other day, and it just kind of stuck with me ever since. And what he said is that you haven't seen your wife in 10 months.
Oh, man.
Is that right?
I don't like when he says that, though. But it's true. It's true. Yeah, I left Ghana January for preseason, and I haven't seen my wife yet, so... yeah, obviously, you know, me and my wife, we're on the same team. We know, you know, we got a trophy to win. So, you know, after winning it, I'll go home and see her. So
how have you been able to push through all of the outside soccer stuff to continue to perform? What's this year been like for you?
This year has been, it's been crazy for everyone. So, we all got no excuse. You know, we've done a great job and we need to finish the job now. My teammates, you know, the staff, my wife, my family, you know, my Columbus family, they've kind of like really helped me through these times because, you know, after every training, I got to go home alone. Obviously, we have video, you know, with the wifey, but it's, you know, it's different than, you know, it's better than having nothing. So I'm grateful for the people around me, you know, they've, you know, kept me grounded. So I'm grateful for that.
Well, you've got a strong backbone. I know you're an African brother. I know what you know, what it takes to survive. Now let's bring it to the field. You were center back. You were up for MLS Defender of the Year because you had these stellar performances. You're going up against arguably one of the greatest strikers to ever play in Major League Soccer, and Raul Ruiz Diaz, and a winger that is as good as anyone with his speed and finishing, and Jordan Morris. How do you prepare as a center back for those two threats?
I need to be ready. Obviously, me getting ready, I don't think I need to even add what we're doing collectively. I need to psych myself physically, mentally, and be ready like I always do. But I think I need to take it even to extra level now because this is like the ultimate, you know. So I know how to get ready and I'm going to be ready.
What responsibility has or what has Caleb asked of you within this structure? Like, it seems like you guys have a good relationship and he's really got the best of you in a lot of ways this year. What does he ask of you? How would you describe that?
I think he's just told me to go out there and be myself. You know, we've gotten more closer this year. So, you know, he just, you know, hey, guy, hey, go out there, be you, you know, because, you know, we've been together for 2 years now. So, you know, he kind of like got more out of me. And it's, you know, as easy as that. Jonah, go out there, lead the team. And, you know, he thinks I've done a great job till now. So we now need to finish the job on Saturday.
And by more, you mean that layoff to Arter, you're a number 10 now. You don't even play defender. You're
on attack. One time, straight out of the air.
He kind of screamed really hard, though. That's why I kind of played in that ball. Because I was setting up to hit it one time. But the way he was screaming, hey, hey, hey. So, I needed to
play. Hey, that was a nice layoff, though. I'll tell you that. Because I don't even know too many strikers that could lay it off like that. So, well
done.
You
know, when you're around players like, you know, D and Luca and, you know, G, we know G has improved a lot. We all know. You know, so when you're around these kind of guys, it's incredible, you know. So I see what they do in training every day. So I just, you know, picked up those stuff from them.
Yeah, you were like, I could do that. I'm going to watch this. I got this. It's in my bag. Tell us about playing with Lucas Arrayan. Jonathan, what has he brought to this team?
It's incredible. You know, he's one big part of the reason why we're in this position now. And you know, we thankful and we grateful for him because we all know he had a couple of issues during the season. And, you know, we all felt his presence when he's on the field and we felt his, you know, absence when he isn't on the field with us. So We're thankful that he's healthy now with us in you know, during this crucial moment.
Can I ask you, you sort of like emphasized there that Giassi has really improved. You've been with him for a while now. In what ways have you seen him really take big steps forward?
I think he's one of the most incredible guys and one of the most dedicated people I've ever seen. He works so hard, extremely hard. So it's just, you know, the testimony to the work he put in training. It's incredible. This guy will come on the field early and leave late. He's always working on something, always working, always, hey, Jonah, can you help me here? It's incredible. So we all know as a professional soccer player, you want to keep improving. You know, even the biggest superstars, you know, want to improve on something. So, you know, to play for the United States and we've seen his growth, you know, throughout the years, it's incredible to even share one locker room with him.
We just discussed a little bit ourselves, but we don't know as well as you what it would mean to win this because of what you've been through in Columbus as a group, unsure of where you'd be, unsure of what was going on. And now this rebirth, this rebuilt, hopefully ending or will end in a new stadium next year. What will it mean to this group and to you and to the Columbus fans who you know better than we do if you're able to get this done here this year?
It's going to be incredible, you know, because the fan base here, I don't think any other fan base, you know, have had an experience like they've had. So it's going to be an incredible send-off for the stadium, you know. It's just going to be incredible to put another silverware in the trophy case, and it's going to be an incredible story for U.S. soccer, you know, because we know how this club and their fans kind of rally behind their team, because it's incredible what they did off the field and obviously what we're doing on the field. So we need to reward them for their sacrifices and what they've done for this team.
Now, there's also you, though, Jonah. I mean, you've had a year. What would it mean to you to end this year with the championship, to have everything that you've gone through and the distance that's been between you and loved ones, to at the end of it say, okay, I had this historic moment. We had this historic moment. We lifted MLS Cup. Would you say, God, it was all worth it? How would you, how do you think about this opportunity for you personally?
Personally, I always put myself second and put everyone else first because, you know, I'm so grateful for this team. They gave me the opportunity to be with them, you know, at the first place. So I'm just a servant. I'm here to serve. And obviously, I'll put the team ahead of me because, you know, if they didn't give me the opportunity, I wouldn't be here. So I just want to give this to them. I don't really need anything right now. So as a captain, as a leader of the team, I just want to win this for this team so bad.
Top man. And I know you're looking forward to that foo-foo after you win the MLS Cup. Man.
You know, let me get this, you know, mission done and then foo-foo all week.
All right, Saturday, big game for you, big game for the crew, big game for the Sounders as well. Jonathan, thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you so much for having me. God bless.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, what an interview from my defensive player of the year, an MLS vote. Jonathan Mensah, the best ball-playing center back in the league. What an interview, because that's what defenders of the year do. You guys were all wrong.
Okay. Let's do the player spotlight right now. Real quick, before we get to Christian Roldan. Who are you watching and why, Charlie, in this game?
This might surprise everybody, but I'm going with Nuhu.
Sam Stachel. Sam Stachel.
Seattle Sounders left back. And I know it also caught everybody by surprise in the first half against Minnesota United. When he's going, streaking up the left, he stops about halfway, turns his hips, and just plays a driven ball over the top, laced to Jovan Jones in behind on his stride, right on his foot. I think he even caught Jovan Jones by surprise because he was wide open and kind of hesitated, and his first touch was a little bit off. But he is a player because of his athletic qualities, his strength, his commitment, can really be an asset for Seattle Sounders down the left side and also neutralize whatever that Columbus Crew is going to throw, whether it's Harrison Offal and stealing it from him and getting down the right side. But also, you know, that Luis Diaz matchup, which I think is going to be one of the important 1v1 matchups throughout the game. What does that look like? Does he have Luis Diaz back defending, or is he on his heels all the time? this can be an impactful player. And he's a little bit of a wild card. Is he in the game? Is he making the right decisions? Is the right tackles? Or does he get a caution early on? And all of a sudden, Brian Schmetzer is looking at the bench and maybe he goes to Jovan Jones at the left back position.
Early. He's got Brad Smith too. He's got an embarrassment of left back riches here.
You got different options. So that's one player I'm going to have my eye on.
I think the 1v1 matchup there is going to be interesting because Nuhu does not get beat that often 1v1. He gets this reputation as a wild card for some of the things he does and his mannerisms and, you know, wearing the Western Conference Championship trophy on his head like a Goonie, whatever it might be. But like 1v1, there's not a lot of better outside back defenders in this league right now. I'm going to be looking at Artur and Nagbe because I think for the Crew, we've talked about their desire to possess, and that's sort of the hub that it all comes through. But it's not just possession and just sort of like, you know, we have the ball, we're going to keep it. It's possession and finding a way to open up that opposing defense, to unbalance the Sounders in a way to get the ball to the feet of or in behind four Diaz or Santos, and in particular, Zelarayán. He is going to try to drift and find spots where those two can find him. And those two are going to play off each other and push forward when they can to create those passing lanes. So I think you're watching them. And because of them, you're also watching really closely Svensson, João Paulo, and Nico Lodeiro in those same spaces. I mean, we talked about the midfield battle with the Revs. This is that taken up a big, big notch. Oh, yeah. Because these two might be the two best midfields in the league. But for the Crew, I think if Artur and Nagbe are on the ball, are productive, if Nagbe finds opportunities to have those 10, 15-yard bursts away from people that draw a defense and let Zelarayán drift into a pocket where he gets the ball and then does magic, that's what can win the game for them. And everything is balanced on that possession and the chance creation that comes from it. So I'm going to be watching those two guys real closely.
For me, I first want to mention Harrison Offal, who I think has been a top five right back every year in this league and doesn't get mentioned. Coming off Jonathan Mensah, the Black Stars, we got to give our love. So I had to mention Harrison Offal. I thought he was huge against the Revs as well. But the player I'm watching, and I think gets overlooked too much, is Christian Roldan. And when we talked, I think, on the last show about Nico Lodeiro being the most important player in this Seattle group, I think Roldan is number two because his acquisition in the Super Draft gave them, you know, the salary cap space to bring in more talent. But his ability to play with anyone and anywhere has allowed Seattle to maintain this level. Ozzy Alonso leaves. Who's starting in central midfield? It doesn't matter. They start alongside Christian Roldan. You've got a pure defensive midfielder in Svensson last year. Fine, Roldan can start next to him. This year, it's João Paulo and Svensson's hurt. It's fine. He can start next to him as well. You need to play him at right midfield. You need to play him at right back. Wherever you play him, he gives you an above average performance. And at times, he's a man of the match. An elite, and he can do it in a lot of spots, and his flexibility leaves Schmetzer a chance to bring in Jovan Jones off the bench or start Jones or move Svensson, whatever he wants to do. Roldan gives him that ability, and he can be a game changer off the right wing as well offensively. And this game, Pedro Santos is a huge factor, and whether it's Alex Roldan or Leerdam, that's going to be a problem for them, and he's going to have to help defensively, and I think he's capable of doing it, and I think he's been one of the underrated players, but he will go down as this dynasty, one of the most important players for Seattle.
Ah, using the D word. I see you. I still remember the moment. I was on the draft floor when the Sounders were trying to move up, trying to find a pick to get Christian Roldan, waiting to see if he would fall. And he just kept falling. I remember the moment after they got the pick, they made the trade. I believe it was a trade to get to that spot.
Yeah, with RSL, I
think. Yeah, and then the handshakes at the table, Garth and Hindo and all the guys looking around each other saying, ho, 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 we got our man. I don't think any of us really knew what that meant. Well, we know now. Let's chat with Christian Roldan on the other side, predictions, and we'll run around MLS. We'll be right back. All right, it's another AT&T call to the field. Christian Roldan of the Sounders with us. Christian, what's up? How's it going, man?
It's going really well. Excited to be here, and hopefully we can get a good result this weekend.
All right, we have 5 minutes with you, so we're not going to waste any time. Straight into it. Give me the evaluation of the opposing midfield that you got on Saturday. Zelarayán, Nagbe, Artur. Pretty salty, man.
Yeah, I don't think these three get enough credit. Honestly, it's probably the best three that we'll face all year, and rightfully so, right? So it's going to be interesting. You know, Nagbe, who keeps possession extremely well. Zelarayán, who can play that final pass, and Artur, a bit of everything. So reminds me a lot of our team, and it's going to be a big test for us, I think.
The thing that Columbus doesn't have, though, is a guy who can play defensive midfield, attacking midfield, right back. You've done it all, and especially this year. You've moved around even in this postseason. do you feel most comfortable doing that? Or do you feel like there's a spot that you still want to stake and say, this is what Christian Roldan does best?
Yeah, I think I'm a center mid at heart. I think I, you know, I'm a box to box player who, you know, wants to get into the attack on occasion and make those deep line runs, but also can make the game for the team and also be an extra help with the six and with the 10. So jack of all trades for sure. But I do feel like my strength is in the middle at defensive mid or as an eight. But, you know, the game changes and it's very fluid. And, you know, with our team and having Gustav, sometimes I'll drift out wide. Sometimes I'll drift out right back. And if that helps the team, then I'm okay with it.
Look in your heart, Christian. What are you? Are you a true Seattleite now, or are you still a Californian? What do you count yourself as?
Man, well, the majority of my life was spent in California, and I grew up there. And now I feel like my adulthood is is more of a Seattleite. So I didn't really drive a car until I got to Seattle. So it really feels like I grew up, my maturity grew up in Seattle. So being away from my parents, but yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult to say because Seattle has given so much to me, and you know, I want to give even more back because I'm just so grateful.
You might be given the third MLS Cup in 5 years back. I still remember the moment Garth Lagerwey and Hindo and all the guys at the draft table, like shaking their hands off because they got Christian Roldan. When you think about what you and this club have been able to accomplish in your time, do you feel spoiled? Do you feel like you've gotten exactly what you deserved? How does it feel to be in this position yet again?
Oh, extremely spoiled. We were talking about Jordan, myself, Brad, Alex. We were talking about legends in the MLS not being able to get to one MLS Cup or, you know, win a trophy. And to be able to play in four finals in 5 years is pretty unheard of. And we really have to make these moments count because you really don't know when your next time is. So extremely spoiled, grateful, and now just not taking it for granted and going for that third trophy.
You talked about growing up, you know, maturing in Seattle. We've seen you mature on the field, but off the field as well. This has been a year unprecedented for a lot of reasons, but one has been the activism of athletes. You're wearing a Justice for Manny Ellis shirt right now. Can you talk a little bit about what you've done this year, what your team has done, what this league has done, and what it's like, you know, talking about these political issues and also still trying to win and be the player that you are?
Yeah, it's been a difficult year, I think, for a lot of people, obviously with COVID, with Manny Ellis and countless other victims of police brutality, and trying to find that right balance between, you know, kicking a ball and setting a statement and, you know, being morally at your best. And so, you know, I wear this shirt because justice hasn't been served. And for many other people, you know, that don't have that voice, we need to be that voice. So, we formed a coalition in Seattle, with all professional athletes, and we want to continue to, provide for the city. And, you know, we have people from, the Seahawks, Mariners, Sounders, and the Storm. So we're trying to do our part, but you know, keeping the message going is extremely important.
Life is bigger than the game. The referee just blew the whistle on us, Christian. We'd love to talk to you more, but keep it rolling, man. We'll watch you on Saturday. Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay, it is that time. Hope you guys have had time to think and pontificate and figure out what narratives are most important to you and whose fan base you want to deal with, who say they doubt you or who champion you because you picked their team. It's predictions time, and I need a winner, I need a score, and I need a game MVP. And I just drew lots in my head, and Charlie Davies, you got the short end of the stick. You're up first.
Lead strong, Charlie, lead strong.
Yeah. You know, I want to say the Columbus Crew get the job done, and the MVP would be Lucas Zelarayán. But I'm going to lean on experience here. I really am. I just look at Ladero, Rui Diaz, and Jordan Morris. Just that threesome really puts you under pressure. because they have the pace, the tenacity, and just the quality ball control, the first touch, the awareness of each other. I just feel like they're so dynamic that Columbus Crew hasn't faced a trio like this, even though I know they can handle it. I just feel they're just going to have the edge. So I think the Sounders get the job done. I think Svensson comes back into the lineup. I think he solidifies that midfield because he is going to be defensive. He has good anticipation. João Paulo is good on the ball to find. Not only he can find Rui Diaz, but he can play Jordan Morris and Rui Diaz in behind. So I think João Paulo has been a great signing for the Seattle Sounders. Stefan Frey in goal. I think Seattle wins very close. I think it's going to be, you know, one of those 1-0 games, maybe a 2-1 game, an extra time 2-1 game. And I think the MVP goes to Ladero.
Real bold, Charlie.
You know, I'm trying to decide.
I'm not going to go bold here and go, Shane O'Neill is the MVP for the Seattle Sounders here.
Oh, man. I'm going to go to Sounders, too.
Clip that out when Shane O'Neill wins
exactly,
MVP. Yeah.
Exactly. We should do that to Doyle. We should have Anders just, like, have those in the hopper for us. I'm going Sounders, too, even though I think, like, in my heart, and don't take this the wrong way, Sounders fans, I'm going to be rooting for the Crew just because of what they've gone through as a fan base and as a club and kind of what they've emerged as on the other side. I think that storyline and everything that's been associated with that is very inspirational. So I'd love to see them win. The flip side is I think the Sounders winning would be as fitting as it can be because of what they've done and what we talked about with the dynasty and sustained excellence. I just think this is old hat for them and they'll know exactly how to handle it. And I think ultimately when you look up and down the field, they have more difference makers, as Charlie said. So I'm going to say it's going to be 2-1. I'm going to say in regular time. And I think Raul Ruiz Diaz is going to get both goals and he is going to be your MVP.
So I'm going to flip that. I'm going to say 2-1 Columbus. I think you look at that Minnesota game, two goals off set pieces against Seattle. I think set piece is going to be massive for Columbus to get over the top. And then I'm going to pick Jonathan Mensah as my player of the game. Scores a goal off a set piece, locks it down defensively for this team. I will not be surprised any way this game goes because of the talent on both these teams. But I think you're going to see a game where it's Columbus knocking on the door consistently. And I think they'll find one in an open play. I think Seattle will find one on the counter. And I think it's Columbus late on gets one on a set piece from one of the big guys coming up from the back.
Jonathan Mensah on brand for you. MLS Cup.
It really is
the 25th edition Saturday.
When I'm right?
It's not 8:30 p.m. Eastern, Fox, Unimas, TUDN, TSN, TVA. Watch it. We will talk about it on Monday, break it all down. I can't wait. It's going to be an amazing game. It is the perfect way to end the 25th MLS season. It's been a long one. It's been an enjoyable one. It's been an exhausting one. It's been a lot of things, but it has not had a champion crown just yet. We'll do that on Saturday. All the coverage at MLSsoccer.com, of course. Quickly around MLS, let's rapid fire this thing before we get out of here. Commissioner Don Garber in his State of the League said that MLS will more than likely take over the sale of Real Salt Lake. So keep your eyes on that one. We'll see what happens with the club. He says they are not planning in any way to move them. They have so much support. They have the facilities. They have success in Salt Lake City. That's good to hear. We shall see who is leading that club from an ownership perspective down the line. Nashville SC will stay in the Eastern Conference next year. Of course, Austin FC into the West. Their expansion partners, let's say, coming in at the same time, made some big changes this week. Paul McDonough, who is the chief operating officer as well as the sporting director of Inter Miami, stepped down. Technical director Kurt Schmidt is out too. Some big changes for Miami. They'll have to see what happens. There's also some rumors slash reports by Sam and Paul over at the Athletic that Will Trapp will be traded to Minnesota United. That's interesting. And it's also interesting that those rumors came out ahead of McDonough and the Schmidt news, Dave. What now for Inter Miami? What do you make of this particular move?
You can understand the frustration in the way this year went. I still think for this team especially, they were leaving their powder dry for the summer to try and make a big splash off who was available. And obviously the COVID-19 layoff threw all that in the air. The one thing I would say is, and this is a pretty perfect comparison because of Paul McDonough, Orlando kind of got rid of him early. And then it took them a really long time to dig themselves out of a hole because you have long-term contracts, because he had a long-term build and you went completely away from it. And they lost themselves until Oscar Pereja took over. When you look at Miami, you're talking about Gonzalo Higuain, who's locked in. You're talking about Pizarro, who's on a long-term contract that was a massive buy. And two young guys in Pellegrini and Carranza that you'll lose so much money if you get off of them. So I look at a franchise that probably is trying to work between the margins over the next year. That's really the only flexibility they'll have. And I wonder which direction they go, because that to me says, go get an MLS experience guy, get MLS vets, try and use Austin FC's expansion money against them, try and look at who's available on the waiver list and all those things. But I don't think that's how Miami thinks. So I think this is a very dangerous moment for Inter Miami, and this is a huge signing coming forward for them.
I think that's where they have to look, because you look at who they left or they didn't re-sign or didn't bring back in their roster decisions at the end of the year. It's a lot of those veteran players, MLS experienced guys that McDonough brought in to be that core and just weren't that core for them this year. Some more news, DC United down to Chris Armas, Gonzalo Pineda, and two others we do not know the names of per Stephen Goff at the Washington Post. Ezra Hendrickson is apparently out as a candidate now. So we'll see where they go. Laurent Blanc and Patrick Vieira are being linked really heavily to the Toronto FC job. Both those guys, I guess, would make sense. Big profiles. I mean, Matt Beasley said goodbye to Kansas City in an emotional post on Twitter. They made their roster decisions and they listed who they were renegotiating with right now to try to bring back. And he was not one of them. 12 incredible years in Kansas City. I will say this, that his career and what he accomplished and what he represents puts him in the upper echelon of athletes in Kansas City history, whether they're born and bred or not. And certainly in the born or bred category, he's at the very, very, very top of the list. It's a guy that grew up in Overland Park who came back and has been with the same club his entire career, that built them up from, honestly, when I was covering him to start, it's kind of a joke. Like, not that the people there weren't great people and they weren't trying to do great things, but they were playing at an independent league baseball stadium. You know, they were still the Wizards. They didn't have any cachet really locally in that market. And by becoming Sporting Kansas City and becoming winners and having that stadium and building this incredible thing that he was really the face of for the vast majority of that, they became a huge thing in Kansas City, and he was there to do it. I mean, he played in the World Cup. He was a Defender of the Year. He was best 11. He was one of the best players in this league over the last decade. And while I'm sad to see that he won't be able to finish where I think he probably deserved to finish, I am very interested to see where he might go. I mean, we threw out Nashville in the pre-meeting because of Mike Jacobs. You see Chance Myers, who played on that back line with him as a scout in Nashville. Maybe they could use that third center back. I mean, I know Dave Romney had a great year and just re-signed, but that link up with Mike Jacobs would make sense.
That makes sense off the field, right? What's his next move? And they could say, and
it could make sense on the field too, potentially.
I think it's risky to put the amount of money I think he's going to get out there to bring
he's not
going to
get that much money.
I think he's going to get the max of what a veteran can get, though. My guess was Chicago Fire. They just need MLS veterans in spots, especially defenders. It's the Midwest as well. I think it makes sense for him to go to a place like that. Or he's got to be the Drew Moore signing, right? Which is a team that's close, LAFC, that thinks he can get them over the line for 6 months to a year of production.
He's not going to be a consistent starting back wherever he goes. I think he's going to be like a maybe half the season he plays, half the season he doesn't, more of a locker room presence, somebody who can give some experience or some tips to the younger players who are playing that position. It's just a player you can depend on. That's the kind of role you're looking at with Matt Beasley, especially since you've seen him the past 2 years with Sporting Kansas City. So wherever he goes, you're not paying him like he's going to be a starting center back. You're paying him for the experience, almost like a player coach, where you're going to get some valuable minutes from him, but not someone you're going to depend on to play 90 minutes every single game of the year.
We already did DC. I have a long list here. Buzz Carrick at the Third Degree says three official offers are now in for Brian Reynolds. Of course, he was linked with Juve. He's been linked with a lot of different places. We'll see what happens with him during this winter. And the Fire have picked up a 21-year-old Bulgarian winger. They are really combing the globe for players. They have gone all over the place with their transfers so far. We'll see how that works out for them. The big news after MLS Cup coming up next week, Austin FC's expansion draft is on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. We're streaming that thing all over MLS channels. So more news to come on that. We'll make sure you're up to date on how you can watch that. That's always sort of the first domino to fall, so to speak, after all the roster decisions, because you have a crazy amount of trades. You have all this scuttlebutt. You have all the players being taken and then maybe flipped. You have the entire league being affected because the dominoes just start falling. We will preview that on Monday's show, because Sunday night we will have the list of unprotected players that Austin FC can choose from. Charlie, if you were Claudio Reyna, Josh Wolf, you're looking at how you're building your team. You already have two DPs that are playing down in South America right now, will be coming up. What would you be thinking about the expansion draft? What teams in the past would you be looking at as examples? What would you be trying to get out of it?
Well, I think that the easiest team to suggest is Nashville. You went out and you got some valuable veterans who still have a lot left in the tank, who can make an instant impact, like Dax McCarty, what was a key signing, and Walker Zimmerman trading a lot of money to get Walker Zimmerman and Dax McCarty. Those two players really gave you a core of down your spine, players with a lot of experience who still have quality. So I think for Austin, Josh Wolf has been around the league forever, and Claudio Reyna has been in executive positions. They know exactly the kind of players for their style of play, the style that Austin FC are going to play to bring in the right kind of players. And so they've been scouring the league all year of figuring out, okay, which guy can we take? Who's maybe on the latter end of their career with a certain club, but still has some longevity left, or at least 3 to 4 years. I think they have a couple of guys that they're going to make a play on.
I don't think you're going to see, obviously, Walker Zimmerman's and Dax McCarty's in the expansion drafts, but you may see those sort of players in the before and after via trades as teams look to like make sure that they can protect the right amount of players and not lose somebody for nothing. Look at Nashville last year. Abu Dunlady, they took a flyer on him. Didn't exactly work out yet, but it could. Zarek Valentin they took. They turned that into Joe Willis, who is their starting goalkeeper. So you see right there the value you can get. Julio Anibaba was a locker room guy and played some important minutes, but was not a starter necessarily. They got $150,000 for Brandon Vasquez. So there's the asset play. That is what the expansion draft is really about. It's about picking up assets. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Rendronda as well, they brought in. They ended up trading him down the line to the Seattle Sounders and got Hadwala Bawana back too. So you're looking at, as an expansion team, ways to build everything up that you have. And there are guys like Ben Sweat, for instance, that were available to enter Miami that they picked up. So there's a lot of decisions to make, or even like a Lee Wynn, they got grabbed as well, and then Miami flipped him. We'll see what happens. 6 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. Any thoughts on the 25 greatest? How about the biggest snub? Who's your snub, Dave? You can go check out the 25 greatest MLSsoccer.com. I think it's a very good list, but they're all always snubs in these situations. Who was yours?
Yeah, there wasn't enough spots. The big one that stood out to me, and we've talked about him a lot over the course of this year on this show, is Shalvey Joseph. I thought he was the piece for those New England Revolution teams. I know they didn't get over the hump in the finals, but to continue to be competitive, Clint Dempsey coming in and out of the team, Taylor Twelman being forced to retire, all the other pieces that moved in and out of that New England team, and Shalvey Joseph was a consistent, ends up playing over 300 games in his MLS career, could dominate central midfield, end to end of the field, and then could switch into other positions if you asked him to, and still do a job, not elite, but still got a job done and was willing to do it. If he had been American and played for the U.S. national team, he would have been unquestioned on this list, and he would go down, I think, as one of the best American players. He was not able to get American citizenship, played for Granada or St. Vincent in the Granada, who he then coached and did well. But I think he's one of the great MLS players. I would put him first on my team. I was building a fantasy team because he can just play with anyone and do his job in so many ways.
Ezra is the Vincy Heat, just to throw it out to
sorry.
You. I would go with Armas and Ozzy as my snubs. I know that people go to attacking players first, but I had both in there. I just feel like to have just, I think Beckerman probably be the only dedicated D mid is probably the wrong decision, at least in my perspective. So I think Armas and Ozzy are probably the two best defensive midfielders, including Shalvey, who was also on my list. I had four defensive midfielders that should have been there. Those guys just always get overlooked. That's why we have a Continental Award for them. So Chris Armas and Ozzy Alonso deserved more shine than they got in this one.
Yeah, and for me, you look at the striker position. I know it was only from 2010 to 2014, but Thierry Henry, the quality that he possessed, goals, assists, hold-up play, his knowledge of the game, first class. He's easily a top 25 player in this league's history. Now, I think you throw in kind of the MLS Cup, right? That the success in the playoffs, he lost in the Eastern Conference championship finals in 2014. Who? But I think that's a clear snub. And another player who I don't know if too many people think of him, but it's Carlos Ruiz. This is a player who delivered. He played for a bunch of teams, and I think that hurt him. It wasn't like one or two clubs, and that was it. But this was a league MVP. He scored a game-winning goal in the MLS Cup. He was one of the most prolific strikers in Major League Soccer. I think he has a clear shot at the top 25 greatest players of all time. And Shalvey Joseph, I'm with you. Both class. Like, this is a player who Celtic came in for, and the Revolution did not sell. But when you talk about a player who has this presence, great skill, calming, can make the tackles, and can vision a 10. You know, he can dribble out of pressure. And it wasn't, he didn't beat you with pace, but he beat you with his size, his knowledge, and he could maneuver, could score goals. He had it all. And that's a player who should definitely be in the top 25.
Couple of shouts for defenders that didn't make it. I would throw Jimmy Conrad in there. I would throw Michael Parkhurst in there. I think Omar Gonzalez had a shot as well. And then Balboa is one that I think would be on the precipice, but didn't quite get in.
I got one for you guys.
No.
Currently playing, maybe not yet can be considered top 25, but currently playing, who do you think breaks into this top 25 list?
Well,
like a Nico Lodero.
Yeah, if the Sanders win, I think Nico Lodero has a huge shout to that. And I think the next time around will be 50, so it should be easier. Now you'll have another 25 years or whatever it is to
and Carlos to Vela. Count fun. Carlos Vela, once he plays his time in him. Yeah.
He's set the goal record. I agree, but it's got to be more than what he's done. He's got to be consistent about? For like he another couple said. Of years.
Yeah, but this is not happening this year.
Yeah,
but he said, "Who do you think is going to get there?"
Do you think
Carlos Vela is the player who will get there?
Okay, all right, fine. We could go another 20 minutes, as Anders, but he wants us to get out of here. MLS Cup Saturday, December 12th, 8 PM Eastern, Fox, Unimas, Tudian, TSN, TVA, because we are going to ignore Anders for just a second. Give me one quick thought on that national team game against El Salvador. Cash Mueller, let's go, baby. 2 goals in his debut. Stop, that was pretty awesome.
Stop going over hype, please.
Okay, how about Io? Stop. You want to hype Io?
I'm happy he got on the score sheet. But I don't want to hype. Listen, we were in a position a couple years ago where you'd take anything. You take a 1-0 win over El Salvador, a horrendous El Salvador team. And I love the fact that we absolutely crushed them. And I like that players took their chance and their opportunity and played themselves into more camps and more opportunities. But let's not act like this is like a major result against a really quality side where, you know, these performances should be magnified times 1,000. Like they're playing against England's first team or Spain's first team or, you know, France's first team. This was an El Salvador
or Egypt team. In like a confederate. No, I'm sorry.
this was not a great opponent, right?
Fine, Charlie. It wasn't. We know that. But we're just trying to get a little hypey.
I don't want to get too hype. Okay.
Okay.
Because we're right now we're in a good mood. We're in a good level of where we're going. Let's not get overhyped. But I love the players where they were played, that their positions. I think they did an incredible job. Mark McKenzie, he showed me exactly what I was hoping to see from him on an international level. Chris Mueller definitely came in and made his mark of, yes, I deserve more looks. But, you know, I'm not saying – I don't think he's still first team level.
Okay.
Let me wrap up what Charlie's saying real quick for all of you. The bar has been set. If we beat teams by less than 6-0, the U.S. national team is a failure. Because this is the bar for Charlie. This was the most important game, and this is where we stand now.
Yeah, the bar's high for me. Yes.
Boom. All right. Well, on that downer, MLS Cup on Saturday, 8:30 PM Eastern, Fox, Unimas, Tudian, TSN, TVA. Hit us up, extratime@mlssoccer.com, 401-206-0MLS. Is that the right number?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man. I haven't sang the...
it wasn't the jingle. Different route.
Yeah, you went different commercial.
All right, on that note, enjoy the game, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.